You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert. Coming up, it's Reveal. President Donald Trump wants to build a wall between America and Mexico. Hundreds of miles of border fence are already in place, but most of the nearly 2,000-mile stretch is uncovered. On this episode of Reveal, the political, logistical, and geographic barriers that could get in the way of the president's plans. That's tonight after 7 here on the Ideas Network. First, while our country may be called the United States of America, these days it can feel like anything but. Tensions are still running high after one of the most divisive elections in the history of the country. But our next guest says there's a way forward, and it requires looking to the past. In a new book, she says that we as Americans need to re-embrace the vision our country's founders once had, the belief that we could stand as a great nation only if we stood united. And by re-embracing some of the core values they had, we can all become better citizens and demand the best from those who represent us. Sophia Nelson joins us now. She's an award-winning author and journalist and has previously served as a congressional committee counsel in the House of Representatives. Her new book is called E Pluribus One, Reclaiming Our Founders' Vision for a United America. Sophia, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thank you for having me.
I want to start off by asking you, how would you describe the state of our union right now?
That is a great question. Loaded question, but it's a great question. Look, I think that we have had challenging times before as a country, and we are in the midst of one of those times. I think that whenever any great society, as we are, has demographic shifts, we're seeing it in Europe, right, with the Brexit vote, and we saw it here in America in the 2016 election. There's a bit of nationalism going on, and that always happens when we have great shifts in our demographics, meaning we have more people of color now in the United States. We have more influx of immigrants, whether legal or illegal immigrants. We have diverse religious backgrounds. We have a lot of diversity, which has always been our great strength. But what happens is that when the heartland, when what you would call your everyday hardworking American people, whether they're black, white, whoever they are, there's this sense of nostalgia. My country's not the way it used to be. Things aren't the way that I grew up with them. And what happens is we're resistant to change, right? We're resistant to growth. We're resistant to transformation. This is very common. It's happened in civilization since the beginning of time. And America is really in the middle of what I call a midlife crisis. That's really what's happening with us. And so that's why you see so much division, if you will. That's why you see so much rancor and fighting and polarization, because people are trying to wrestle with, who are we as the United States of America? And I would argue we're who we've always been, which is our founding fathers coined the phrase, e pluribus unum, out of many, one. They understood in 1778, 1780, which is when the seal got adopted, that oneness was always going to come from our great diversity. So I would say we're doing okay. We're just having a bit of a midlife crisis right now.
It's comforting that you think it's cyclical, which implies that things will get better before, you know, maybe a couple hundred years they get worse again. So what is it going to take to get into the upswing of that cycle?
Well, you know, you said something I think key, which is that, you know, if you look at the world's great republics, you know, I like to make this point. America is a republic. It is not a democracy, and they're very different. It's a democratic republic or a constitutional republic, if you want to call it such. And that means that direct government is in the hands of the people through their elected representatives, which come from our neighbors, our friends, et cetera. And so I think that the question is, how long do republics stand? Well, Rome is the last great republic, and we know that republics last about 300 years, right? That's, if we're looking at history, that's about where they stand. We're at 241, right? Which means we're on a ticking clock. And the question becomes, can we right this ship of state here and hearken to the values that the founders gave us, which I believe are timeless? I believe that they gave us a brilliant roadmap to where we were going and to where this country needed to always be in order to thrive and be the great country that it is. And I think that what we have to decide right now, and I think we're in the process of deciding that, right? Are we going to be, to borrow a phrase, a divided states of America, where we've got blue-collar workers over in this pocket, we've got Southerners who, favor gun rights over in this pocket, we've got the urban enterprise centers over in this corner, and then we've got progressives up in the New England and out in the far west corners. If that's who we're going to be, we're probably going to have a challenge, because at some point, I think what the founders understood was that when they coined the phrase e pluribus unum out of many one, what I want people to understand is it didn't mean our founders didn't disagree. It didn't mean that they didn't not get along at times. In fact, Virginia had very little in common with Boston, right? And if you know your history about how the Great Revolutionary War started here in America, Boston started to have the problems first, right, with the crown. And the other colonies came kicking and screaming, right? They were like, hey, Boston, that's great, but that's your problem up there. You're having a problem with the crown. Those of us down here in South Carolina, we're thriving. We have slave labor. We've got cotton. We've got rice. We're rich. We're not having a problem with the crown. So why would we go to war for independence, and why would we unify? Well, ultimately, they unified because they understood that if they had any shot of being a nation, they were going to have to come together despite their differences. And that's what I hope my countrymen can see right now, that some of what we're doing is very destructive to the republic.
We're talking with Sophia Nelson right now. She is the author of E Pluribus One, Reclaiming Our Founders' Vision for United America. And when we look back, we have to remember that not everyone was on the same page even then. Mm-hmm. You said we came together, but for instance, you write about this in your book, how do you reconcile the vision of the founders with their actions, namely the fact that many of them owned slaves at the time?
Absolutely. And don't forget, women were oppressed. Women were chattel. Women couldn't vote. Women had no rights here either. And I think the way you reconcile it is the way that you reconcile any history, and that is that you have to keep things in their context. And I think where we get in trouble is when we want to look at the founding fathers through a 21st century lens. You can't, right? Because they weren't living in the 21st century. They were living at a time where slavery was literally being practiced by every civilized, quote-unquote, great nation on earth, whether it was Spain, England, France, et cetera, the United States. It was being practiced everywhere. Does that make it right? Absolutely nice. Wrong. Does it make it okay? No, it doesn't. What it makes it is what it was. And what I say to people is, here's the greatness, though, of what the founding fathers did. When Thomas Jefferson, who was a slave owner, and from all accounts that we all can know at this point in history, had a 30-40-year relationship with one of his young female slaves, who was actually his wife's half-sister, right? This man wrote the words, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal," right? "Endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights." Let's stop there for a moment. Now, when Thomas Jefferson writes those words, he's a slave owner and having an affair with his young slave, which there's a power structure inequity because she can't tell him no. It's not like she can not join in and not participate. She didn't have that kind of power over her own body. And so you're right, there is this extreme disconnect with these great men who had this great vision of liberty for themselves. But when they wrote the words, and if you look at the legislative record, if you were to look at, you know, the debates and everything that they were having at the time, what you would see is that there was a lot of discussion about these very issues of slavery, et cetera. And you remember Abigail Adams saying to her husband, John, remember the ladies, right? She was telling him that you can't build a new nation without including us, too. We need rights, too. We need to be participants as well. And certainly that fell on deaf ears for a long time. But the greatness of the words that Thomas Jefferson penned and the greatness of America is the vision and the constant perfecting of our union. And so the union constantly gets better. It constantly is perfected by the men and women who are provocateurs, who are disruptors, people from Paul Revere to Elizabeth Cady Stanton to Madam C.J. Walker to Rosa Parks, Martin Luther King, and Abraham Lincoln, people who push us to live up to the calling of our founding fathers. And that's why I said we need to reclaim their vision, because the vision was perfect. It was pretty bad the way they went about implementing it at the time, with slavery and women being denied rights and being considered property of their husbands. But ultimately, we righted that, and we end up in the 21st century with our first African-American president.
We're talking right now with political commentator Sophia Nelson. She's the author of the new book, E Pluribus One, and she's making the case that we as Americans need to rediscover the things that unite us, not that divide us. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. How do you think we can become a more united country? And going one step further, how do you think we can become better citizens? Do you think it's important to look to the past to understand the present and what's expected of us? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation in just a little bit here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert. We're continuing our conversation with political commentator Sophia Nelson. She's the author of the new book, E Pluribus One, and wants us as American citizens to reclaim our founders' vision for a united and strong America to overcome the divisiveness of today. And we'd like to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Do you think there's more that unites us than divides us? And what should we be rallying around? How can we be more engaged, well-informed, and empathetic citizens? Call us at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Take a first caller now. We've got Zach on the line in Ashland. Zach, hi.
Hi. I'm calling because I heard the question, and I thought it was a great question. I think there's more that brings us together than that divides us. And don't get me wrong, there is a lot going on that distracts us. However, we're going through these changes together as a country. We have to accept Barack Obama as the first president, first African-American president, and we all have to accept Donald Trump, and he's doing a great job personally. And the main thing is that all these changes are happening, and as Americans, we are accepting these changes and moving forward and changing along with it as a country. So I think there's more that does unite us than that does divide us.
Zach, thank you so much for that call. And Zach says, yes, there is more that brings us together than that divides us. He sees us changing together. How important is it, Sophia, to, as we go through some of these things, these, for example, demographic shifts that you're talking about, how important is it that we change together?
Well, I don't think we're doing a lot of changing together at the moment. I think we're trying to, like I said, it's a midlife crisis. And what happens in a midlife crisis? You get a fast car, you get a girlfriend that's 25 years younger, right? You go do crazy things because you've lost your compass. You don't know who you are, and you're trying to figure out, you know, where you're going and what you're doing. And I think what America has done, particularly in this last election, I mean, look, I think we do accept that Barack Obama was the first black president, and Donald Trump is the president of the United States right now, and people may not like it, they may not agree with it, they may want to protest it. That's the beauty of America. That's their right. But the fact of the matter is, he is the president of this country, and there are a lot of Americans who don't feel like he's doing a good job, right? There was a women's march that was exceptional all around the globe, in point of fact. I mean, you have the British Parliament voting that they don't want him to come for a state visit. It's like it's madness in ways that I've never really seen before, which says to me that people are not in sync, they're not in step, and they're not together. And what I'm suggesting is that America has always been a country where we disagree, we dissent, we protest, we provoke, we provoke, we do all those things because that's what keeps liberty refreshed, as Thomas Jefferson would say. And so I'm not worried about that. What I am concerned about is that we respect our institutions. So we don't undermine judges when they're on the bench and they've been confirmed by the Senate by calling them so-called judges. We don't pick on a free press and pick which members of the press are allowed access and lock others out. And when we get personally offended by members of the press corps, we bar their media outlets from access. That's not what we do here in America. We have a free press. We have a judiciary that has the same power as the executive and the legislative branches of government. And so it's very, very important that we remember that we're different and we're unique. And that's what makes us the greatest nation on the face of this earth.
Thanks a lot for the call, Zach. And we move next to Charlie in Milwaukee. Hi, Charlie.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. You know, just a comment on your last response. A free press doesn't have a reporter giving debate questions to one of the candidates as opposed to the other. So I don't know if we really have a free press or an unbiased press right now. But my real question was one based on the Constitution. If we are hearkening back to the old times, do we go with the Constitution that was originally written as Scalia does, as the originalism, the original intent of the writers, or do we view it as a living, breathing document that allows us to change with the times? Thanks so much.
Charlie, thank you for that. And a couple parts of Charlie's question, Sophia, but one is getting at, to me, what happens if people stop believing in the institutions that our nation is founded on, in a sense, like the press. There may be other instances as well. And also, what about the Constitution? Are we an originalist, or do we think that it's breathing and it can be changed?
Well, great questions. Great questions, and they're addressed in the book. I'll take this issue of whether you're a strict constructionist, a textualist, or if you're a living, breathing person. So you would look at the Earl Warren Court, for example, is, to me, and it's in the book, the Warren Court, I talk about the expansion of rights that happens in the 1860s with the Radical Republican Congress, 13th, 14th, 15th Amendments, which abolished slavery, instituted equal protections under the law, and gave black men the right to vote, 15th Amendment. Women and black women did not have the right to vote yet. And so that's one period, and then you go forward to the Warren Court era, which is in the 1950s, Brown versus the Board of Education, and a series of cases that lead us all the way up to the Civil Rights era. And I would suggest that the Constitution is and has always been a living, breathing document. Now, people want to argue that, but let me just take this from a very personal point. If the Constitution is not a living, breathing document, Sophia Nelson is still a slave. She's a black woman, so she doesn't have a whole lot going for her in America if we're going to hearken to the original intent and the laws. I'm three-fifths of a person. I'm not even a whole human being. You as a woman don't have any rights. You're the property of your husband. You can't vote. You can't even get your children in custody in a divorce. We could go on and on and on. You don't have the right to contract. You don't have the right to own anything, and so thank God the Constitution expands and breathes, which gets back to my point about this notion of perfecting the union. The vision as set forth in the Constitution has everything to do with liberty and everything to do with freedom, right? It has to do with our rights coming from our Creator God. This is what our founders believe. No man is above another man, yet they own slaves. So you see these contradictions because they're men. And men, for mankind, flawed. We're all flawed. I'm flawed. You're flawed. We all have issues. We all have failings. So, as I said, you have to view the founders in the context of the time in which they existed, which is the 17th and 18th century, right? You have to look at them as men of their time. Doesn't excuse them, but it explains and gives you a window into their world. But the vision that they wrote is beautiful. The words, again, you know, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. What a powerful statement, right? It sounds great on paper, but it took us 100 years or more before those words could actually apply to men of color, to women of color, and to white women, right? Because in the original document, it didn't apply to those groups of people. Is everybody following me? Hopefully that makes sense. So for people who say, I'm going to be a strict constructionist, well, I think it depends. If you're looking at the Second Amendment, Sophia Nelson would probably be a strict constructionist. I believe that the Second Amendment, which deals with the right to keep and bear arms, is pretty clear cut. I think that our liberty has everything to do with the fact that Americans were able to own guns. Had they not been able to own guns in the 1700s, when Great Britain decided they were going to taxation without representation, they were going to have mob rule, and they were going to start to abuse the colonists the way they did starting in Boston, had they not had muskets and been able to fight back, you and I would be saluting Queen Elizabeth. She would have her picture on the wall instead of Donald J. Trump.
Sophia, I want to ask you, we're getting close to the end of our time together here. It's about a minute left, but you call on us as citizens to get active and to change and do things and not put it off on politicians, but to hold the power ourselves as citizens. In our last, less than a minute, what would you like us to do? What's at the top of the list?
Engage, informed, and self-governing. That is code number one in the book. That is the call of the founding fathers, to be engaged, to be informed, and to always be self-governing. Self-governing means we're a republic. We pick representatives to represent us in Washington, and when they don't do the job, we throw them out. If a president's not right, we can impeach them. We do have the right of a free press. We do have the right to keep and bear arms. We do have free speech. They gave us every tool for us to be vigilant and to keep watch. We have this backwards. We think that the government is our boss. We're their boss. So we need to reclaim the founders' vision for how this country is supposed to run, and it's supposed to run by we the people. And that's really how we take control of things that are going on right now. We have to reclaim that mantle, and the power rests with us.
Sophia, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
That was Sophia Nelson, author, journalist, and political commentator. Her new book is called A Pluribus One, Reclaiming Our Founders' Vision for a United America. I'm Veronica Rickert. You're listening to Central Time.